Welcome to the Curriculum Corner Podcast, a podcast all about curriculum, where the only criterion on our rubric is fun. I'm your host, Mike Bossman. Let's follow the pacing guide. Welcome to today's podcast on the foundations of curriculum. Today, we'll split our curriculum chat into five different pacing guides, focusing on a few different foundational curriculum aspects. Let's follow the pacing guide. First up today on the podcast, what is curriculum? Let's follow the pacing guide. To start, let's define curriculum. We need to make sure we all understand a basic definition before moving forward. According to the book Curriculum Leadership, where most of the information on this podcast will come from today, the curriculum is a set of plans made for guiding learning in the schools, usually represented in retrievable documents of several levels of generality, and the actualization of those plans in the classroom as experienced by the learners and as recorded by an observer. Those experiences take place in a learning environment that also influences what is learned. So, what does that mean? Well, in other words, a curriculum is a set of documents that have been thoroughly researched and have within them standards, objectives, assessment details, and overall learning outcomes. Most curricula start with a scope and sequence, which helps guide the learning over many grade levels, and most curriculums come to life with the aid of a great educator. All curriculums have guides, called pacing guides, sometimes called maps. These help the educator know what to teach and when, but also what assessments will guide the learning. Some assessments are formative and give feedback along the continuum of learning, and other assessments, called summative assessments, give us feedback on whether our students have learned the topic we have been teaching, or if we need to go back, do some reflection, and alter instruction and retest. To meet the goals in the pacing guide, we need to make sure that our instruction uses the frameworks the curriculum team have set forth so that we can make sure all students are meeting the end goals and therefore meeting the objectives and standards. These are guided by assessments, as I stated earlier. Great curricula take a team of educators to come together and spend many years developing curriculum. Speaking of curriculum development, it's time to move on to our next pacing guide, which is the different types of curriculum. Our next pacing guide focuses on types of curriculum. Let's follow the pacing guide. Over the next few minutes, we're going to talk about a few different types of curriculum. Pay attention here. We have the written curriculum, the supported curriculum, the taught curriculum, the tested curriculum, the learned curriculum, and the hidden curriculum. Let's look at each one of these in a little bit more in depth. We're going to start today with the written curriculum. A written curriculum is a curriculum designed by a group of teachers and is usually done within the school district itself. Sometimes school districts will hire consultants to help them guide the curriculum writing process, and these curriculums need to be piloted before implementation. Next up, we have the supported curriculum. A supported curriculum is just as it sounds. It means that a group of educators who created the written curriculum have now added additional resources such as textbooks, online materials, video resources, and other curriculum resources to help support the curriculum. Moving on, we have the taught curriculum. The taught curriculum refers to the teachers or educators who take that curriculum and bring it to life in the classroom. This type can be harder to predict as it depends on many outside factors, such as how the teacher teaches, the classroom environment, how the teacher interprets the information presented in the curriculum, and so forth. Next up, every educator's favorite, the tested curriculum. This is the assessment part of the curriculum. Using assessments can help educators and curriculum teams determine if what is being taught from the written and supported curriculum is achieving the goals outlined in the curriculum and in the scope and sequence. Two type assessments, as we mentioned in the last section of the pod, are formative assessments, or things you're checking along the way, and summative, which is more at the end of your unit to see if students learned what you've been teaching. Speaking of learned, we have the learned curriculum next. This is what students will come away with at the end of the learning process. These goals are usually outlined in the curriculum documents and will need the help of a tested curriculum to see if students learned what you wanted them to learn. Do they leave your course with the knowledge to move forward into whatever lies ahead for the student? Finally, we have the hidden curriculum. These are all the things you learn but are not found in the written or supported curriculum. These are things like norms, values, procedures, as I found on the website, simplyeducate.me. These are things like how to be a good student in your classroom, or how to line up, when you talk, when you raise your hand. All those things you learn in a school but aren't part of the written curriculum. These things teachers will continue to work on outside the written curriculum and must not be ignored. Very important. So, now that you have an understanding of what curriculum is and the different types, let's look at the history of curriculum. Stick around, we'll be right back. For our third pacing guide today, I'm going to break down the history of curriculum. Let's follow the pacing guide. Today, we're going to go way back in time, up until the current present time, and talk about a few different eras. And if I'm able to pronounce all these correctly, that's going to be a win in our assessment today. Good thing the only criterion in this podcast is fun. Here we go. First up is academic scientism. This lasted from 1890 to 1916. This era focused heavily on the academic and scientific. Science was a new study at this time, and some popular theorists like G. Stanley Hall wanted to incorporate it into the curriculum of the time. Next, we move on to progressive functionalism, which lasted from 1917 to 1940, and was the merging of scientism of the last era and a more child-centered approach by the likes of John Dewey. This movement focused not only on the curriculum, but also how to instruct the curriculum. Next up, we have developmental conformism, which lasted from 1941 to 1956. It was called the transition period and focused on child development, or the stages students go through and how they can affect their learning. There's also a focus on conformity during this time. From there, we move to scholarly structuralism, which lasted from 1957 to 1967, and was focused on math and science. It was at this time that major curricula was starting to be written for the core areas in education. Next, we move to romantic radicalism from 1968 to 1974. This was the focus on child-centered schools, especially three particular forms called alternative schools, open classrooms, and elective programs. Privatistic conservatism is our next time frame and era from 1975 to 1989, during which I was born, and was when largely conservative views made their way into education. Some important factors during this time were a more rigorous curriculum and more use of critical thinking, along with some other areas like multicultural education. From there, we moved to technological constructionism from 1990 to 1999. It's during this time that America worked to improve its schools. Technology became a larger part of education at this time. It will continue into the next eras, as we know, and probably into every era after that. This is also the time when standards-based grading came into the forefront of education lingo, and as we know, is still around today. Next is our penultimate era called the modern conservatism that lasted from the year 2000 to 2009. It was characterized by everyone's favorite, No Child Left Behind. Work hard to prepare students for the 21st century and wanted them to leave school with those 21st century skills. Our last and current era is called technological functionalism, 2010 to the present. An era still working to be defined today. Stay tuned. You're probably wondering how this all fits into the curriculum taught here, where I'm recording from in Sioux Falls. I really feel like we fit well within the last few curriculum eras, from privatistic, where we focus on rigor, to technological, where we look at standards-based, to today, where we're adding in more and more technology and still trying to focus on the students and the student outcomes. Now that we have a better understanding of the history, and I pronounced all of those correctly, I believe, let's talk curriculum theories. Coming up next. All right, folks, welcome back. Next up, we're talking curriculum theories. You know the drill. Let's follow the pacing guide. First up, we have structure-oriented. These theories work to analyze the curriculum and its parts. They also seek to see how the parts of the curriculum work together. They ask questions like, what is curriculum? And how does one part of the curriculum differ from another? They spend time getting down the nuts and bolts of curriculum and making sure every term is defined. Next, we have value-oriented. These theories work together to analyze the value of the curriculum makers and what they decided to make. This theory is very critical. They focus on the hidden and stated curriculum. A question this theorist may ask is, how do schools continuously or unwittingly mold children and youth to fit into societal roles predetermined by race and class? Big questions. Next, we have content-oriented. This theory focuses on the content of the curriculum. This group is defined by three different categories. Child-centered curricula focuses on the child as the start of the learning. Knowledge-centered curricula, this focuses on that the content is where you should start. And society-centered curricula. This group itself is split into three groups, the reformers, futurists, and radicals. And this group believes that society is the starting point of curriculum. Lastly, we have process-oriented. This theory focuses on how curricula are developed or how they recommend how the curricula should be developed. This style works to combine a few of the other styles by looking at content, structure, and values. I would say my school district falls under a few different theories. While we focus on content and structure, I think we also fall mainly under the process-oriented. We're not as great on value-oriented parts of the curriculum, and I think it is hard sometimes to focus on hidden and finding ways to, well, write it down because that's not usually done with the hidden curriculum. We had many discussions around curriculum meetings about values, but we didn't add many to the actual curricula documents. Tricky. All right, folks, we're heading into our last pacing guide right after this. All right, let's head into our last pacing guide for today, and that is how various governmental groups influence curriculum. Let's follow the pacing guide. As you know today from news stories all over the country, and particularly in Florida, there's great influence from governmental groups on education. This can include school boards, parents, local governments, state governments, departments of ed. Often some of the groups, depending on the political party, want to make sure students are being taught the correct values. Correct, again, depending on the party in charge. The federal government has a large role when it comes to curriculum. Some laws would be the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, Individuals with Disability Act. Also some commissions you may have heard of, A Nation at Risk, Goals 2000, No Child Left Behind, and more recently, Every Student Succeeds Act. Here in Sioux Falls, we have our State Department of Education that dictates a great deal of what we do in curriculum. For instance, we have a team that writes the standards from the state and gives the standards to each district. Each district team then meets and decides how to use those standards to create their curricula. Next, when it comes to graduation, the state requires that the curriculum that is taught in high schools meets graduation requirements and that the teachers who are preparing the students are certified to teach the subjects that they need. Finally, all schools in South Dakota go through an accreditation process every 5 years. That accreditation covers many aspects of the school district, including curriculum. As part of the accreditation process, we have to share our current curricula so the state can see what we are doing, making sure that we are meeting the standards and needs of our students. Whew. That was a lot of information on the foundation of curriculum. So glad you stuck with me today for a special episode of Curriculum Corner, where our only criterion on a rubric is fun. See you next time. And remember, if you're unsure where to go, just follow the pacing guide. This podcast was sponsored by Curriculum Leadership, Stages for Development and Implementation, 5th Edition. Written by Alan Glatorn, Floyd Boshi, Bruce M. Whitehead, and Bonnie F. Bosch.